y'all, it's your girl Lola Love. Welcome back to another episode of the Atypical Social Worker Podcast, a podcast by social workers for social workers and other helping professionals. Again, my name is Lola Love. I'll be your host for this episode, and if you're new to joining us, welcome. We love adding new people to the community, and if you are coming back, thank you so much for all your love and continued support. And so this episode is honestly super exciting to reflect on. One, because it is the season 2 finale. So just to even think that there has been 2 seasons, I never even thought that back in March when things shut down due to COVID-19 that I would even be doing a podcast, let alone in a second season as we approach 2021. But I thank everyone again for their support, for the people that have guest starred on the podcast through season 1 and season 2. Thank you so much for your time and your energy and just offering a little bit of insight into what it is that you do or what it is you hope to have other people in this industry be aware of. And in addition to that, you know, I also think that today's topic is very timely. We'll just be talking about transitions and backup plans and options that professionally we should all have now. Unfortunately, with COVID-19, it has put a stall on a lot of different industries. Today in my hometown in Buffalo, New York, we were just announced that we are going back into the orange zone. And so for New York State, to go into orange means that non-essential businesses, are shutting down again. So like gyms, restaurants, things of that nature. It also means that institutions of education, so colleges, middle schools, things like that, are also closing and going back to remote education. And I work in higher ed, so it was important that I got this information, these updates today. But it also means that for myself and for my team and for our retention programming, like, we were just starting to build momentum in what we were doing on campus. And although we worked very hybrid in the sense that we didn't really meet with a lot of students in person, we did a lot of virtual stuff, but there were some opportunities to meet at a socially distanced, in a socially distanced way. So it kind of sucks because, again, it's been hard enough to engage students. We finally started getting momentum, and then we just found out today that we have to shut back down again. And so, honestly, if this time period has taught me nothing else, is that we have to all be flexible. You have to have different tricks to sort of pull out your bag when you need to, whether that is to re-envision your platform and how you engage it and how you engage with clients, or if it's, hey, I'm not really liking the direction that this is going in, I think I need to make a change, but I need to have options, with that change. And so I think, again, the conversation with Dr. Michelle Haley will be really helpful to a lot of people. Her organization, Together Well, works within the realm of mental health and with mental health professionals. They connect the community to mental health professionals. And the cool thing about it is, as a new graduate of a graduate program, you don't have to be licensed in order to start engaging with her organization. So she'll definitely share more about those details in a few minutes, but all I can say is transitions are real, baby. Like, when I tell you, these past couple of weeks have been bizarre for me. I'm currently in between housing situations, so I'm looking for housing. It's made me really reflective on, what it means to have, housing insecurity. And not that I even count myself in that situation, but just reflecting on some clients that I have worked with in the past and not really, I think, having an appreciation for how stressful that can be and how, again, when you don't have basic essentials, everything else is irrelevant. And I've especially learned to appreciate that mindset when working with college students because, as a teacher, as a professor, they may see a student and say they're not turning in their work or they don't care about their education. But I can't tell you how many times I've sat down with students and expressed the concerns that their professors have only to find out that the student is living in their car or that this student hasn't eaten in 2 days, or this student has a child and they're in a custody battle, or a combination of all three. So I definitely think, again, that this time period that we are all in, you know, across the globe, is just a time to really reflect, actively listen, you know, maybe be a little bit more patient with people than we normally would be, especially when we just don't know what their situation is, because a lot of things are happening for a lot of people, and a lot of people are being affected in various ways by COVID-19, by racial injustice across the globe. And so it's time that we start to put ourselves in other people's shoes and really consider what they're dealing with. You know, everything is not about us every day. And it's easy to wake up every morning and go to sleep every night with only thinking about your own concerns and your own problems. But I truly have just been thinking about the fact of community. So if we really did operate as a global community, as a local community, as a national community, like, how great would that be if we really did care about the next person standing next to us? I think COVID-19 is really just an incredible metaphor for just the importance of caring for others, because currently in this pandemic, it's not about just what you do and how it impacts you, but it's about how what you do can impact the person standing next to you. You know, if you decided to be reckless and went into a grocery store, that's not just impacting you, that's impacting everyone who was in the grocery store at the same time that you were, and then their families and all the people that their families are connected to. So again, just consider community. Consider how, from a professional standpoint, you can leverage engaging with communities and expand your reach. And, you know, again, I encourage you to listen to what Dr. Haley has to say, because she does have some amazing thoughts on how mental health professionals can kind of help to better engage communities in need. But overall, I, again, am just grateful for all of you for being a part of this community with the Atypical Social Worker Podcast. Again, as always, I encourage you, please engage with us on Instagram, follow the website, or visit the website rather, you know, DM us on Instagram. The IG page is @atypical_social_worker_podcast. You know, I post little games to the story sometimes, or just thoughts and things like that. I appreciate so many of you who engage on a regular basis. If you have any community events coming up and you kind of, you know, need some additional eyes on it and you want it shared, definitely just DM it to us, tag me in a post. I'm more than happy to share it in the story. Again, you guys are my community and I value you, and I pray and hope that this community continues to grow. I hope that I have an opportunity to speak to where each of you are in your professional career, whether you are a graduate student, whether you are someone who is new to the field of social work or another helping profession, whether you've been in the field for a very long time and are thinking about, you know, reflecting about what the impact has been since you've stepped in this career, or if you're considering switching careers altogether. I hope that these conversations help. I hope that the people that we invite to come on to the podcast help. And if not, tell me that too, because again, never in a million years did I think a podcast was going to be a thing for me. But now that I'm here, I definitely just want to be intentional about what it is that I am doing. So, you know, with that, thank you so much. And let's jump into this week's episode. There goes my favorite sound of the week. Class is officially in session. Hey guys, I'm sitting here with this week's feature, Michelle Haley. Hey Michelle, you can say hi to the people.
Hey everybody.
I am so excited to have you as this week's feature. To get started, I'd like to play a little icebreaker to get you loosened up. It's called 21 Questions. This is the game where I go first and you go second. I will list some random items and you can just give me your preference. For those listening, feel free to play along or connect with us on Instagram each Thursday as we reenact this segment on our IG stories. Are you ready to play, Michelle?
Let's do it.
Okay, perfect. So, first question, are you an early worm or a night owl?
Early worm.
Ooh, I'm a night owl. I like literally thrive in the middle of the night.
I used to. And then like 2 years ago, I was like, nope, I'm up down by 9 p.m.
Ooh, I might have to talk to you about how to switch from being a night owl to an early worm, because I've tried. It just has not worked for me.
It was an organic process. I don't even know how it happened myself.
Okay, so would you rather play with Play-Doh or slime?
We're getting to the tough questions. I like the way Play-Doh smells. I know that's kind of interesting.
Play-Doh does have a good smell. It does.
Yeah, okay. Thanks for that. I needed the validation on that one. I'm going to go with Play-Doh.
I don't know. That is a tough one. So I like the slime that has like the little styrofoam balls in it. Mm. Like that type of slime. I don't know, sensory-wise, it gets me where I need to be.
Okay, well, that's like an up-leveled version, though. Like, that's like a whole nother level, a class of
that's
its
true.
Own. Like, I'm thinking, like, Gak from back Nickelodeon days.
Oh, yeah, like, okay. So, if that was the choice, I would definitely choose Play-Doh, because it's, like, too sticky, I guess, or, like, ugh.
Because the one with the balls almost becomes a hybrid of the Play-Doh and the slime.
That is true. So I've sat and watched my niece make all different versions of slime. And she has this one that she makes with like shaving cream. Mm. And I actually like that one the best because it's like Play-Doh. So.
Oh, interesting. I need the recipe. Cool.
Would you rather hear the sound of the ocean or a light thunderstorm?
Ooh, light thunderstorm. Definitely.
Yeah, I definitely have to co-sign that. I love rainstorms, and the sound of rainstorms is just like, it's perfect.
Mm-hmm.
So this one might be a toughie. Do you prefer the East Coast or the West Coast?
Ooh, the West Coast is the best coast, you know? I love my East Coast too. I'm originally from Maine, and then I lived in Virginia for college and then sauntered out west, and they're both great. It's hard to pick, but I think, you know, I guess my heart's in San Francisco.
Okay, we can go with that.
Okay.
Would you prefer to be on a beach or in the mountains?
Depends on the season. But I'm feeling like beachy these days. I'm going to beach it up.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. Like, I love the beach. I really, really do. And probably because I'm from Buffalo and it's normally mm-hmm. cold and we don't have, like, we have beaches, but they suck.
Right.
So.
Yeah.
Okay. So last question. In terms of annoying sounds, are you more annoyed by like the sound of styrofoam squeaking or nails on the chalkboard?
Probably the chalkboard.
Really?
Yeah.
I cannot stand the sound of styrofoam. Like, if a package comes with like the thick pieces of styrofoam, I have to have somebody else open it. Like, it just, I don't know, it sets me off.
Yeah, which is acceptable. Like, they're both like awful sounds. So definitely.
So that was the last question. So in other news, we're just going to dive in and get to learn more about you and the wonderful things that you are doing. So do you want to start by just telling us a little bit about yourself, like your educational background, maybe a little bit about like where you're from, your family and things like
that? So like I was mentioning, I'm originally from Maine and was there for my first 18 years and then went to undergrad in Virginia. And then after studying psychology, I started working as a case manager at a homeless shelter. And just through my work there, I really realized how important it was to get more resources and skills. At that time, I had a bachelor's degree. And so I enrolled in a master's and doctoral program out in San Francisco. And so with two turtles and a U-Haul truck, I drove west and picked up my roommate along the way, someone I who was going to the same program. And so I picked him up in a state, and then we drove the rest of the way together and went to school. And then after that, I began I worked in correctional facilities, hospitals. I've worked at Kaiser, a bunch of different school settings. And those experiences have really been really rewarding and valuable. I love working in the community. I've worked as an adjunct professor in master's and doctoral programs, teaching statistics, chairing research projects, teaching addictions and trauma in multicultural settings, prevention and intervention in school-based settings, to name a few of the courses. And through my work, my clinical work, I decided that I wanted to do more opportunities to help lower the barriers and access to care. And so at each of my clinical sites, I had had the fortune of doing mental health educational workshops and just saw the huge need and utility there. And so really went into the work of working in community-based settings and trying to see how I could best serve our community. So in a nutshell.
I mean, I love that. I mean, I love the variety of experiences that you've had, because I think it definitely helps you to be like more relatable no matter who your client is. You can definitely like talk to them from like different levels. And I definitely love that you like ended up focusing on access in the community, because I mean, that in itself is like huge, from just considering, you know, the types of insurance that people may or may not have, the stigma of seeking mental health supports, depending on like your background and your culture, but then also like environment. Is there anything within the vicinity of where I live where I can actually access support if I truly need it? So that's awesome. That's super awesome.
Exactly. And like, you know, you think about the average therapy hour for 50 minutes is like $150, $160. And like, if your insurance doesn't cover, your EAP only covers 5 sessions, like it's really hard for people to be able to pay that upfront out of pocket. And so we just need so many more ways to create accesses to services and lowering barriers, systematic barriers.
I totally agree. So you talked a little bit about this already, but tell us about your why. Like, did you have like an aha moment one day where you were just like, this is what I want to do? So like, what made you choose the career path that you are on now?
Yeah, I would say there was a bunch of experiences that really led up to the why. But I was working with some police departments and the DA, doing some domestic violence workshops, and just really seeing how important it is when we work with the community and provide education, like we can help really make an impact. And so just through those types of experiences, and then even in my own family, I remember it was Christmas Eve one year. I was actually still in grad school, and I had flown back to Maine, and my grandfather was in the hospital. And so it's Christmas Eve, and we're in the hospital, and a doctor walks in, and he starts talking in all this jargon. I barely knew what he was saying. My papa didn't understand. I'm a first-generation college student. My family had the opportunity to complete high school, both my parents and my grandparents. And so, you know, this doctor comes in and he's talking in all this like jargon. We had no idea really what he was saying. And so I just really had like an aha moment there, where it was like, what is the point in going to school and getting a doctorate or higher degree if you're not relatable and you can't bring that home and bring that back to people to help serve them? And so when I got back, and my papa was fine. He was okay, and yeah,
yeah. I was gonna ask, yeah, like, no. Please,
yeah, he's
okay.
He's still good. He's still good today. Even he's good. And so, but I came back to California, and I was like, let me start working on some workshops that are like, you know, have really great concepts that I've learned in school, but like can be digested by people who haven't spent like, you know, eight, nine years in school trying to like learn these concepts, you know? So that's kind of when I first sort of, I would say, had like the aha moment, and I've been working on my nonprofit ever since. The first iteration was called Workshops for the People. And that was basically connecting therapists to the community. And then we stopped that and created Together Well, which is a new nonprofit that, because we wanted to take out sort of the middle person, which was me connecting the therapist and community. And so Together Well is actually like the up-leveled version, where it's an online platform that connects therapists to the community for emotional wellness workshops.
That's so awesome. And again, like, I love your passion for the community. And I definitely echo what you said about, like, it's great when people go to school and, you know, get vast amounts of education. But when you step back into, like, your career path, and when you, especially when you work directly with people, if you're not relatable, you're not making the impact that I'm sure you would hope you would make in that profession.
Exactly. And going back to, like, the other piece that we were talking about, barriers and access to care, like, workshops are a really great opportunity to do just that, because workshops tend to be cheaper because it's not just one or two people. It's like a bunch of people. And they often offer, like, resources and tools and can show you how to get cheaper services or more affordable services. And they also, people who hold mental health stigma are usually much more willing to go to a workshop than they are an actual therapy session, because it's not therapy. And so it helps, like, penetrate those issues that hold people back from getting services.
I definitely agree with that. Like, I remember, I think it was like in 2015, my mom had just, like, randomly asked me, her church was kind of doing like a family like wellness sort of weekend, and they wanted someone to come in and just talk about, like, basic, like, mental health 101. And I was like, I don't know if I can do that, but I'll try to, you know, just explain it, like, bare minimum, like, if I was talking to someone who didn't know mental health, you know, diagnoses existed or anything like that. And it honestly brought about such a very honest dialogue, and so many people in the room were just like, this is the first time I felt comfortable to even share that they personally were experiencing some things, or maybe had noticed loved ones or family members experiencing some things and didn't know, like, what to do or who to talk to. We also talked about, like, advocacy when it comes to working with doctors, in the sense of, like, yes, a doctor has gone to school and they definitely should have your well-being at the center of what they do, but it's okay to, if they prescribe you some medication, to ask, well, what does that medication do for me? Or if it's making you feel funny, to say, it's making me feel funny. Is that normal? You know, so many people don't question, you know, people that they consider in authority. But sometimes that can be to their own detriment. So it was definitely cool just to have people feel comfortable talking and sharing.
I really resonate with that, because, like, and one of the curative factors of group therapy is, like, catharsis, you know, and validation. And you really get that from workshops. Like, you're with a group of people who are wanting the same sort of information. And in that experience too, they're like, I'm not alone. You know?
Very true. And that, usually that's, like, the main thing. Like, when you feel like, oh wait, it's not just me, you just naturally start to feel, like,
right,
more comfortable,
like in and of itself. Definitely.
So what's, like, one thing, if there is something, that you wish you would have known like when you first began your career or your degree?
I would say I wished I had known in graduate school the amount of opportunities there are to support you as a grad student. And so I did not know that at the time, because I, like I mentioned, like, I'm a first generation college student. I really had no real frame. But I also think to my friends who, you know, both their parents were doctors and they were in the program, like, I also don't think that they knew what was really offered for them. So there's lots of organizations out there, like in the psychology field, there's something called PsychI for undergrads. And then in the graduate programs, there's APAGS, and I assume, and I don't know for sure, you could let the viewers know, but there's, you know, your National Association of Social Workers, they probably have a graduate student division, but there's lots of, and then there's like city divisions. So like in San Francisco Psychological Association for Graduate Students, SFPAGS. So there's like, not only is there like the national programs, but there's like the city and the state opportunities. And so if you dig and you go through, you can find that there's like actually a lot of opportunities. And I did not know that. And it wasn't until I was at the very end trying to like finish my dissertation, I found a grant because somebody had told me about it and applied, and I was lucky to get that and get some money, which all graduate students need money, right?
Yes.
But there's so much more opportunity out there than I had realized. So I think like, I wish I had known where to look. I wish I had known who to ask. There's lots of mentorship programs that are untapped. There's also special programs to help people, like depending on your specialty area or LGBT mentors, like all sorts of different types of mentors out there. And so I did not know that, and I wish that I had known. So I would underscore that.
Yeah, I definitely will have to say, I totally agree with you. Like, so in my graduate program, I mean, really even before that, when I was in undergrad, I remember getting to my senior year in undergrad and being told like that there was no more money. Like I tapped out of my loans, and, you know, and I just remember like feeling so hopeless because I was just like, well, what am I supposed to do now? Like, I can't just go write a check for the amount of money that you're asking me for. Does that mean that I don't get to graduate school? You know, but I've been working so hard. And I literally remember like going to financial aid and like just breaking down in tears. And then someone like pulled me aside and was like, hey, so there are families that often, you know, donate to the school. Let's see if we can find you a grant. Like, I didn't even know what a grant was. And so I remember like literally it was like they found me a donor profile. I wrote a letter to the family, and then it was like, okay, you got the grant, you can finish school. And I was like, wait, why don't
they don't tell people? Yes, you know. And it's almost like, yeah, you have to like find the you know, I'm picturing sort of this mystery house with this handlebar, and you have to push the lever to find the door. It's like they do make it really circuitous and like a labyrinth to access. And like, yeah, it's really annoying. So, yeah. And so definitely. I would say, so not only doing your own research, but like that's where like your relationships and your networking comes in too. Like, hey, this is my, like, don't be afraid to tell people your situation. Like, that's a great story about you being like, this is my situation. I need support. How do I get it? You know? And I think a lot of times, like, we think we have to take everything on ourselves, and we don't.
That's so true. I mean, that definitely is like one thing that can be very scary. Yep. Like, as a college student, no matter if you're in undergrad, grad school, doctoral program, it can just be like nerve-wracking because education is expensive.
Yeah,
like, very expensive.
And just to touch on, you know, and I'm no tax loan expert over here, but, you know, like there's opportunities out there to like help support you with your loans. And actually my nonprofit, so we do events every third Thursday for therapists, like free events. And we actually have extra event that we're doing in December for graduate students. And there's actually a part on money. And it's a free event. If you go to our website, you can find the event, but, and so there's different segments for graduate students. And so one just focuses on like, different like loan forgiveness options that are out there, just to like let people know. And we'll also touch on a couple of different grant opportunities too, just as a side note.
That's awesome. I'll definitely have to like keep my eyes open for those things, because definitely, you know, as we were talking earlier, I'm considering a doctoral program, and right now I'm just like,
yeah,
I don't know where the money's gonna come from. The sky, maybe.
I mean, you know, like a lot of us, like most of my friends, you know, we all did the loan thing, and you know, I wouldn't say like it significantly impacts my living. And if I could go back in time and trade my loans for my PhD, I certainly wouldn't. I would definitely hands down keep my degree. I have no regrets doing it. There's ways to manage it, and you know, it's no fun, of course, but I think to myself, you know, why would I want to let money stop me from my dreams?
That's very true. That's a great way to look at it. So is there like a myth or something that you hear a lot about your profession that you would like to debunk while you are, you know, have the time with us to just say, this is absolutely not true, or this is somewhat true, you know?
Yeah. I would say that, you know, it's that therapists have to have their shit together. You don't. No one's perfect. You know, like no one has everything figured out. So I've heard people say like they need to have like everything sort of hammered out before they go to graduate school or become a therapist. Like even after graduating, they don't feel like they're ready to be a therapist. And sure, there's like an aspect of making sure that you are in a good space and that you're balanced and that you're, you know, aren't going to like harm patients because you're in a place where you're still trying to handle everything. But like no one has to have it figured out. Everybody's a work in progress, and that's kind of life, right? So I would say that that's something within our own profession of like, you know, the stigma that we have towards ourselves.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that's so true. I think, you know, for one, people view, I think, graduate or professional degrees, especially doctoral degrees, as like this unattainable thing that you have to have like all this preparation and stuff for, or just like, just know from birth, like this is what you want to do. And most people don't, like most people kind of fall into it over time. You know, once you're in the process, obviously it's important to stay focused and to make sure that you're hitting whatever marks you're supposed to hit. But yeah, like I'm waiting for the day where I feel like I'm an actual adult, because I still don't feel like that.
Yeah. And then there's, you know, the whole concept too, right? Of like imposter phenomenon too, right? Like kind of feeling like you aren't qualified, or you're not this, or you're not that. And I remember my first year of graduate school, a student had raised her hand and had said that she was feeling basically like an imposter. Like at some point, somebody was going to kick her out of the doctoral program and say, you shouldn't be, you know, we made a mistake. You weren't actually accepted. And so that was like this fear that she had. And the professor, she looked around the room and she was like, raise your hand if you feel that way too. Like that you shouldn't be here. It was an accident that you were accepted at the program. And everybody rose their hand. And so I think that says a lot about, you know, us feeling like, you know, we're all coming from different backgrounds and different places. And so a lot of us feel like we shouldn't be there, or, you know, you've heard the expression, don't should all over yourself,
right?
You know? And so we place a lot of like shoulds and expectations on ourselves. And the truth is like, you got accepted to the program. You are capable. You are smart. You have a good heart. You wouldn't be in this field. So you're exactly where you're supposed to be.
I love that. I definitely love that, because sometimes like you can't hear that enough to make you feel like you're meant to be somewhere. And sometimes you don't even feel like you aren't an imposter until the day you walk across the stage. And sometimes it doesn't end there. So
it doesn't. You know. Yep. I can't even tell you, after I graduated, it was almost like, it took like 2 years after I graduated, even, you know, because it's still like, you're still so stuck in that student idea. And so going back to that event we're actually having some speakers talk about the imposter phenomenon also,
because
it's
awesome.
So relatable to most students, I think. And especially those who, like I was sharing, like as a first generation student and not having sort of the finances, like I literally would, I couldn't afford my textbooks. So whenever there was a book, I would go to like Barnes and Noble and read. I would just sit and read in the aisle and then put the book back because I couldn't pay for it. Or like take a few extra ketchup packets to bring home, you know? And so, you know, when you come from a place of, you know, not having sort of family with educational background or finances or resources, there can be like additional layers on top of the imposter phenomenon because you're coming from such a different place than maybe some of your peers who have parents have been through that process.
Yeah, I mean, so that was a perfect segue to the next question. Like, so if you have any to share, what are some of like the best resources that have helped you like along your own journey? I know you shared some resources and suggestions before, but if there's any like specific ones that you absolutely recommend, would you mind sharing those?
Yeah, I would say definitely your professional community. Like first of all, there's a few not so tangible resources, and those are like your friendships, your relationships. Those are everything. Mm-hmm. They're the ones that are going to help connect you with opportunities and resources. Like, hey, I know that you like working with children this age, this specialty, and I just saw this job opened up. You would be perfect. And they hook you up, you know? So like your relationships, your professional associations. And then there's also like the tangible ones, like connecting with, organizations. Like, for example, I have a tech nonprofit, mental health nonprofit. So I link up with organizations like Fast Forward, who's incredible. And they help with nonprofits who are trying to scale, and they have like great handouts and resources. Also the Community Organization Representation Project. So we have a lot of legal aid that helps support us with like our incorporation documents and documentation for IP and trademark, terms of services, privacy policy. So like finding organizations that align and support your mission. And then, or if you're somebody who's just doing like, or clinical work, or, you know, finding other organizations that like align with that specialty area, I would say doing that, that will definitely help you on your journey.
That's awesome. Thank you for like sharing that, because you're right. Like you definitely can't monetize relationships or networking and things like that. Like those things are truly invaluable. Mm-hmm. But sometimes you get some of those networking opportunities from like connecting with organizations and then like fostering like, you know, a personal relationship with like maybe the main person you work with. So even after that, like that business transaction is done, they might still just say, oh my gosh, I'm just so passionate about what you're doing. Here's some more information. So that definitely, the professional community, at least I find for like the like helping professions, are truly like helpful. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely. And I think too, like also sort of the cognitive frame that opportunities are not limited. Like there is no capped amount of opportunity out there for you.
I love that. So thus far, what would you say has been like your biggest failure, either like a professional mistake or like something personal if you feel like sharing, but like what's like the one thing that you're like, oh my God, I can't believe I did that. And then how did you like recover from that?
Mm-hmm. Well, you'll have to wait for my memoir. Just kidding. Like living is to make mistakes, or I like to think of mistakes as like learning opportunities. And it's almost like we've all had so many mistakes, right? But you know, I'm thinking about, you know, I guess this year, I don't know how much of a mistake, but it was a serious situation where, you know, Together Well, my nonprofit, is a startup. We started a year ago, last October, 2019, as I mentioned, as a step up from the other one. And we had planned an amazing fundraising event. It was going to be at this gorgeous venue in San Francisco. A keynote speaker from the American Psychological Association this summer was going to be speaking at it, among other fantastic, phenomenal speakers. The event was going to be fabulous. We were relying on this event for our fundraising, and it was our soft launch. And the day of our event was shelter in place.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So, like, we were like, shoot. Like, you know, and in that moment, you're like, okay, I don't know what to do, you know? And I sat on it for a few days. Like, I was totally bummed. But then it's like, this is sort of the formula for, like, all mistakes or situations that happen that you don't want to happen, you know, is you have to adapt and you just have to pivot and reframe. And so we're like, okay, well, what do we do? We have a couple of speakers lined up, you know, people were expecting to come to this event. Like, what do we do? So we pivoted and we created a new event, a virtual event. Within 3 weeks, we had, I think we had 13 or 14 speakers talk about telehealth and transitioning from in-person therapy to telehealth, because everybody like were frantically trying to figure out how to do that. So we had attorneys talk about the legal implications. We had, clinicians talk about it. We had people from, telehealth organizations come. So like we got like these different sort of perspectives. And then the senator came and did a welcome note. I think we had like 400 RSVPs, but that's actually how we created our third Thursdays for therapists, because we polled our attendees and 100% said they wanted future trainings or events from us, educational events. So I would say it's really about like taking a crap situation, you know, it's what you didn't want to happen. It's, you know, it's emotional, you know, you plan something for a year and it doesn't happen. And then you just have to pivot and roll with it. And then something even better will happens, right? And comes from it. And so we weren't planning on doing all these great events, but we really want to help support therapists as essential workers now. So each month we do an event on a topic that supports therapists.
That's awesome. And just like the foresight that you guys had to sort of like, all right, everyone's going to be experiencing this difficulty, let's shift to this, you know, versus saying like, oh crap, we just can't do it, so, you know, that's unfortunate, you know, like I like in seeing like, so I work in higher education, and even watching that shift in higher education where it's like, okay, so we have to shift online, and then realizing that a lot of faculty didn't know what online platforms are out there or how to use them. And so it just became somewhat of a stall period for a while. And it was just like, oh my gosh, like what about the students? So the fact that you all were able to not only kind of revamp your event, but then also provide resources to other people that were going through a transition was just like awesome and helpful.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, and we've been grateful to help serve in that way, for sure.
So you've definitely shared some information about your organization Together Well. Like, just share more with us. Like, I'm sure that the people listening would love to know more, love to learn like how they could get involved with Together Well. So definitely just share whatever you would like to share about Together Well.
Yeah, thanks. Together Well is a 501c3 nonprofit, and we connect therapists to the community to provide emotional wellness workshops. And what that looks like is like a principal or somebody in organization could come to our platform, type in the search bar like wellness, and then link up with a facilitator who could offer a workshop on wellness. And the facilitator, to become a facilitator, you just have to have at least a master's degree in a mental health field and then go through our verification process just to show that you have a master's degree and go through the background check. But that's really it. And then you can try it for 3 months free. And then after that, it's $29.99 a month, but it can also always be free because we have a referral program where you can refer your colleagues. And so each time you refer a colleague and they join, you each get a month free. But what's different about Together Well based on other organizations is we're only focusing on workshops, and also our monthly membership fees go back into our organization. Whereas most other organizations, you know, it goes to somebody at the top, like the one person making all that money, you know? And so like we purposely, it was by design that we were a nonprofit instead of a for-profit company, because we really strongly believe in reinvesting in our therapist community. So that that money goes to our marketing outreach to connect you with people who will pay for workshops. It goes to our educational events that we host. It goes to our insurance and organizational fees to keep the platform running. So it's really like this self-sustaining model that doesn't rely, like a lot of nonprofits rely on like precarious grants. Like we want to self-sustain and then benefit the therapists who are part of our platform. And what I love about it is like, I think about myself in grad school, I mentioned earlier, like I could have used a few extra dollars, you know, like no shame in my game, you know? And so I would have definitely done Together Well, not only because I love giving back to the community and sharing my knowledge that I've learned while I'm in school to like help people, but like also there was an aspect of I could financially get some money to help support also. So it was really the best of both worlds, because to be on the platform, you don't have to be licensed. A lot of your college professors are not licensed. So, but you do have to at least have a master's degree.
So can you, if it's okay, could you give an example of maybe some workshops that people have done or been connected with through Together Well?
Yeah, we actually have this one that's going on where somebody has decided to do a pro bono workshop instead of a paid workshop. Paid's great. But like some people elect to just do pro bono either because they want to help support the organization or because it also serves as a referral source for them, you know, with patients or to help like with their branding or to receive testimonials. So there's a variety of reasons why someone might do it pro bono. But and they're linking up with a national nonprofit to help support them during this time of our global pandemic. To do a wellness and self-care workshop. And I just think that that's really amazing that they're donating their time to like help support in that way. So yeah. And, but like workshops can look like anything. And so it could be literally a business, like a tech company could ask, or a school could ask, or even a family. And I think about like families out there right now with, you know, October is Substance Abuse Awareness Month. But like, you know, we know about the opioid epidemic right now and all the families out there who are like, I don't know anything about opioids. Like they could book a workshop about opioid addiction if they wanted. And so it's different than therapy. It's different than an intervention because it's just about education.
I love it. Like, and I think, again, like you mentioned, like for someone who is in graduate school or just finished graduate school, it's also, it sounds like an amazing like resume builder as well, where like I'm passionate about this and I kind of want to, you know, eventually do more of it. But for right now, you know, maybe I can connect with Together Well and, you know, get some experience, get my name out there, you know, and not necessarily have to say like I have to land a job right now doing this, you know. So
yeah, definitely. And we also offer free groups every week to support our members, to build workshops, to help, you know, because sometimes it's one of those things, it's like who has the time to sit down and build a workshop? Like that can feel kind of intense sometimes. And so we offer a supportive environment to help people carve out that time to support them in building their workshop too. But really we're just like a matchmaking site. Then it's up to you to decide, you know, how much are you, do you want to get paid? Do you want to do pro bono, low bono? You know, it's up to you and how you want to do your workshops. You have all the control to work collaboratively with the person requesting the workshop. And that's what I love too. It's like it empowers the community to ask for what they need and get those needs met.
That's awesome. So, I guess, like, so what advice would you give to someone who was, like, looking to, you know, start a path, educational or professional, to be, like, a mental health clinician, or someone who's a current professional that is looking to explore more of, like, an entrepreneurial side of things?
Yeah, I would say it's a marathon, not a sprint. yeah, like, it is, you know, it's a journey. It's a road. And, you have to show up every day, you know, that question about mistakes. You're constantly, you know, having areas for growth and learning opportunities. There are days you might not feel like working, or, you know, not wanting to drive the ship, but you have to. It's a constant stamina. And, you know, with that to say, you know, also the flip of that, right, is listen to your body. If your body's saying you need to take a break, like, your body, you better take a break before your body decides for you. So that's super important. But I would just really say, like it's a marathon. And don't give up. There's a Thomas Edison quote that says, many of life's failures are people who do not realize how close they were to success when they gave up. And I really think that resonates, because it can be really hard, whether you're, you know, going through college and, you know, the payments, like staying afloat and living, you know, if you're living paycheck to paycheck, or, you know, starting a private practice or starting a business, like, there are definitely times where you'll question, like, was this the right decision? And I think it's just about, like, being patient with yourself, trying every day, and building a support community around you, to help you when you need to keep going, you know? That's like it, in a way that sounds cliche, 'cause I think that's what everyone says, but that's because it's true.
I mean, I love that quote by Thomas Edison. I really do like that, because sometimes you really are, like, on the cusp of a breakthrough, and it's just that one day that was just maybe a little bit too hard on top of everything else that was going on, and you stop. And I can definitely personally relate to that, because, you know, like we were talking offline earlier, just about some of the vision that I have for, you know, Atypical Social Worker, and trying to balance, you know, the focus with that, but then also, like, you know, working full time and trying to make time to just, do I work on this? Do I work on the podcast element today? Or do I work on, like, the service side today? And some days it really is like, I just want to go to bed.
Relatable. You know, you heard me earlier, 9 p.m. I'm in bed, like, right.
I need to make the shift. I have to find a way to become this early worm.
Yeah. Yeah, no, totally. And I do think it's funny that I just made that joke, because it's actually, I think this is probably the reason I made the shift, is because I'm most productive in the morning before everybody else gets up.
That's smart, because then you don't have to worry about being inundated with, like, emails or just, like, other things. People are, like, still kind of asleep.
Right. And I think it's, like, it's so quiet, and it's your most, like, creative, for me, it's, like, my most creative space. And then by 9, I'm ready for bed, because I'm tired, because I woke up early, but, maybe that's the shift for you. Yeah.
Where do you see Together Well, like, in the next, you know, like, let's say 5 years?
Well, we are currently national and in Canada. So just stepping out to be international nonprofit. But in That's five awesome. Things, yeah, we're really excited. In 5 years, like, I would love for us to be an international, like, more so in more countries, really helping support people in countries that maybe hold more stigmas with mental health, even so more than the United States, and just helping to break down barriers to help support people, whoever needs help, you know, like, to think about the matriculating out impact that workshops can help in our communities. Like, I don't even think I know what the potential could be, but it excites me.
That's awesome. So before we segue into a little bit, I like to end like on a higher note. So before we segue to that, are there like any last things that you want to say to our listeners?
I would just say, you know, if you liked hearing about Together Well, join us on our Third Thursday events. All of our events can be found on our website, togetherwell.org. You could also follow us on Instagram, or, you know, if you're a therapist, like, join Together Well. You know, we do offer those 3 months free and you can cancel at any time. So you could always just check it out too.
Awesome. So now we're going to segue into what I like to call socialite/social life, because I believe sometimes I feel like people get this perception that people that work in helping professions, specifically like psychology, social work, all we are is our work. Like, we don't have a personality outside of that. We are just people that help people all the time. But I personally call myself like a social worker / socialite, because, you know, pre-COVID especially, I enjoy spending time with my friends, my family. I enjoy putting together like fun events for people to do. So I just want to kind of pick your brain about some of that aspect of your life.
Sure.
So, what was like the number one thing you missed, like when California went into like shelter in place?
Yeah. So I love trying new activities. I've done trapeze and gymnastics and paddleboard yoga and trampoline classes. So I miss the opportunity of like trying different types of activities and like just getting out there and doing different things.
Oh my God, the whole trapeze thing sounds so amazing. Like, I would love to do
it. It was super
like that.
Fun. The scariest part was walking up the ladder.
Really? Not like tumbling through the air?
No. And honestly, it really wasn't as scary as I thought it would be. I actually did a thing where I connected with somebody else. I'll send you a video. I'll text you a video.
Yeah. Okay.
But I like connected with someone's hands and did a whole thing. Yeah. It's just like, you kind of just shut your eyes and see what happens.
Oh my gosh. That is now on my bucket list. I didn't know that I would want to do that until just this very second.
And just as a disclaimer, do not shut your eyes. Do not shut your eyes.
That probably would have been the first thing that I did. It was just like, okay.
Yeah. No. It was a lot of fun though.
So I don't think there will ever be like an old normal. I think there will be like a new normal. But what's like the first thing like you can't wait to do, like once things are at a new sense of normal?
I mean, that's a tough one because I love to backpack in countries. Like that's something like, you know, after I got out of grad school, I made like a point, like I'm doing this. And like now that I'm out of school, I look forward to the opportunity of figuring out a way to do that, like COVID safe. I don't know what that's going to look like yet, but that's what I look forward to.
I definitely like, if you find a way, let me know. Like, I've never backpacked through like a country before, but like, I definitely love to travel. I definitely, I love to almost like go places, during like cultural events and stuff. Like the last big thing that I went to was Brazilian Carnival. Mm-hmm. And it was amazing, but like I can't even imagine what that would look like now.
I know.
You know, like it was just like so many people and it definitely was an amazing experience, but like now I'm just like I don't even know where to begin to think about doing something like that again.
Right. I know. I'm not sure what that's gonna look like. Yeah.
And Coachella was on my bucket list too, and I also don't know what that would look like.
I don't know. I haven't been to a music concert in a minute though. It's been a while.
So do you have like a favorite like fall pastime, like a social type pastime that you normally do either like with friends or family or just even on your own as a point of self-care?
I love passing candy out to kids. I love seeing all their adorable costumes, all the effort they go into putting their costumes together and making like little goodie bags for them. That's, I would say that's my favorite part of Halloween.
That's awesome. So do you guys, like in California, do you guys have like special rules in place with like the upcoming, like Halloween?
You know, I don't know what the, I think probably the county has probably said no Halloween, but I don't know for sure what the rules are. So I don't even know what that's gonna look like. I gotta find out in the next three weeks or so.
It definitely is interesting.
What's going on over by you?
So Halloween is definitely like big in Buffalo, from kids to adults. And so Governor Cuomo has said for New York State in general that it's kind of like their choice, like, and he's trusting people to make, I guess, the right choice, which I don't know if he deems that as being like staying indoors. But we don't have any like specific like rules in place. I don't know if countywide, as we get closer to Halloween, I imagine they might kind of put some stipulations out there for people, like people, especially like people traveling with like children and stuff like that. I imagine there will also be like a curfew, because in Buffalo specifically, we've seen like curfews for Halloween before, just for the point of like general safety. So I wouldn't be surprised if, in an effort to also keep people like safe, that they put a curfew in place. Or encourage people to do more like community center based events versus like individual houses. So I don't know. I'm waiting to see also. It'll be interesting, to say the least.
Yeah, for sure.
So last question, what is like your go-to fall fashion item? Like if you don't have it, you're like, oh my gosh, I can't make it through the fall.
I feel like a burnt orange sweater is always a nice staple. You know, those fall colors.
Yes.
Or like a mustard color. I actually recently got a mustard color sweatshirt at Target that I've been kind of rocking out lately. I guess that's what I would say for COVID times. How about you?
I mean, I basically, for me, the fall is all about like comfort wear. So like anything I can feel like cozy in and comfortable. I definitely love mustard yellow. So now I'm going to go to Target and I might find this sweatshirt.
Well, yeah. And I was going to say, you know, it's funny because when you were asking me that question, I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, it's all about comfort, but that's all I've been doing since COVID hit. Like I'm currently in leggings. So I was like, well, how is it really going to change, you know, from what my wardrobe has been to fall? It's still comfort.
You know? Yeah. Oh my gosh. Like since we just started working hybrid, in Buffalo, and I miss being at home, because literally most days, you know, this is probably TMI, but like most days I only got dressed from like the
Totally.
But then when I did get fully dressed, like leggings all the way, to the point where I'm just like, I don't want to wear actual pants anymore in my life.
What are pants? I don't even know leggings. What pants are.
Yeah.
No, definitely.
Oh, that's awesome. So again, one last time, where can people find you if they want to connect with you, or the Together Well?
Yeah, togetherwell.org. And our Instagram is togetherwell.org without the dot, just togetherwell.org. And we are on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter. What's that other one? LinkedIn. We are on all of those channels also. So, connect with us, book a workshop. If you have any questions, reach out to us through our platform.
Awesome. So thank you so much, Michelle, for your time. You have definitely like shed some light on a lot of things for me personally. So I'm sure that you've shed some light on some things for our listeners as well. And, just have a great rest of your day, because it's kind of still daytime.
Yeah, 4:30. 4:30. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like almost 8 o'clock here. So definitely enjoy the rest of your day, and we'll be in touch.
Yeah, absolutely. Sure. Thank you so much. It was great to connect with you today. And thank you to everyone who's listening.
Well, I hope you guys enjoy listening to Dr. Michelle Haley as much as I enjoy talking to her. She really is an amazing and inspirational person. And I'm so excited about the Together Well platform. I myself definitely plan on signing up for Together Well, because as a social work professional, as someone who has worked in the field of mental health, as someone who's working in higher education and noticing the need amongst students in the educational community, I definitely think I have some skills that I can share, like things that work for me. But also, as someone who is still not licensed as a social worker and aspiring to that, this is a great way for me to continue to build my resume, stretch my skills, but also broaden my reach within the larger national and possibly global community. So I encourage you, if you are a recent graduate from the School of Social Work or from any other helping profession, if you are working in the mental health field as a practitioner, I definitely encourage you to sign up for the platform and just see how you can enhance your reach. Also, I love how on Thursdays they offer training about how you can develop your own workshop and some great tips for hosting virtual workshops now in our kind of post-COVID times. So definitely look out for those, because as someone who does speak a lot, who gives lots of presentations, I still get very nervous about putting together something for a larger group of people or considering myself an expert in a certain area. So definitely those trainings should help boost your confidence as a presenter and really help you kind of explore, again, your outreach, your network, and also get to the bag a little bit. It's no shame in that. Definitely diversify your income. But with that, again, thank you all for tuning in to season 2 of the Atypical Social Worker podcast. Again, I could not and would not keep doing this if it wasn't for all of you who listen in, who respond on Instagram, who check out the website, who friend me on LinkedIn and other platforms. I really do thank you, because again, I speak a lot in front of people, but the nerves never go away. I actually also do poetry and spoken word. And again, the nerves just never go away. So I'm constantly second guessing myself. But every time I have an opportunity to connect with all of you on the platform, specifically through Instagram, through like DMs, a lot of people respond. It's been great. Like, I love it. I love all of you guys. I really do consider this a safe space and a community. I'm going to be working hard over the next few months to not only grow the Atypical Social Worker LLC, but also to sort of think outside the box in terms of next season's episodes and what I can offer, because I want to keep diversifying the content. But again, if there's something that you all want to hear, if there's something that you want me to explore in terms of a discussion, I am more than happy to do that, because I want this to be whatever it is you need it to be. I like it to be, again, a safe space, but also a place where you can go and become well-informed. A place where you can safely explore some of the thoughts that you've had as a social worker or helping professional without necessarily having to make that leap if you're not sure. I'll make the leap for you, you know? I'm here to be that bridge, or at least I hope to be. So again, thank you so much for listening in. Thank you so much for our season 1 and season 2 co-hosts. Hopefully we can get back and bring some of those people on and get some updates in terms of where they are, especially like the social work students and graduate students. I love to hear where you guys are, you know, in a few months or even in a year. But with that being said, guys, love and peace. Make sure you stay atypical yet intentional. Follow us on Instagram. Hit up the website. And until the springtime, I'm out. Love you guys.